This is Talk Radio 680 WCBM. Time now for the Outdoorsman Radio Show with your host, Alan Ellis.
Good morning, everybody. Alan Ellis here. This is the Outdoors and Radio Show. We talk about fishing and hunting and firearms and regulations and wildlife and all kinds of good stuff. So I hope you're joining us this morning from wherever you are. I'm not sure if we're streaming yet or not. Send me a text, or if you know my number, or, you know, drop me an email, ellis@ellisoutdoors.com. Yes or no? Had a little trouble with that earlier. Sparky said we're not streaming. Alexa said we weren't streaming. So the phone said we weren't streaming.
I'll check, but I know we're streaming.
Oh, you know we're streaming?
I know we're streaming.
How do you know?
Because I see a little indicator on the computer.
Oh, there's an indicator out there. Oh, well, I was waiting to hear from Sparky, but, you know, maybe she went back to sleep.
Maybe.
It's possible. So anyway, interesting week. Sparky was here last week, of course, and we had a nice show last week with her and had talked to Dr. Love with the thank you, Chuck. She had some pretty extensive surgery on Wednesday, and so she's recovering. She's still in a lot of pain and, you know, hitting the pain meds pretty hard, which is probably well needed. So, she's at home listening, I hope. And, you know, we just wanted to send out our well wishes to her and let everybody in the audience know that, she's doing good. She did well in the surgery. And so 4.5 hours, almost 5 hours of surgery. And we're praying it all goes well for her recovery, so she's all bandaged up and sore and, you know, like I said, on a couple of different things to help with the pain and the resolution of all that. So we're just wishing her well, and I love you, baby. So anyway, so it's been an interesting week. A lot of stories in the news. The Chuck sent me the link to the bear lottery permits, which is now online and runs through August 31st. The drawing for the bear permits will be September 3rd. You go online. When you get your license or go to your dealer, it's a $15 fee. Even if you don't want to hunt this year and want to keep your preference points going, you can do that. And every time you have a preference point, every preference point gives you another chance in the lottery. So I haven't pulled a tag since 15. So I have 16, 17, 18, and 19. So I've got 4 chances in the lottery this year, whether that'll pay off or not. I've been drawn actually 3 times, and went 2 years ago with Laura as a sub-permittee, and Laura was able to draw, which is nice. So got a lot of stories to cover here in the news today. We'll talk about them. One I didn't print, but I'd like to share with you. And this is from a magazine online called Reason, R-E-A-S-O-N, reason.com. It's an article from the 8th of July. And you remember we had that terrible gun attack in New Zealand, and immediately the socialist prime minister of New Zealand imposed a ban on semi-automatic firearms. Turn them in. Government wants your guns. How do you think that went over with the citizenry of New Zealand? And we have listeners in New Zealand. I hope if they're listening today, they'll give us a shout-out, email or phone call at 410-WCBM-680, 410-922-6680, as you can as well. But maybe you saw this, maybe you didn't. As of the 1st of July, only about 700, they call them weapons, we'll call them firearms here, had been turned in. Once again, responding to horrendous crime by inflicting knee-jerk authoritarian restrictions on innocent people proved to be an ineffective means of convincing people to obey. Specifically, New Zealand's government, which also stepped up censorship and domestic surveillance after bloody attacks on two Christchurch mosques earlier this year, is running into stiff resistance to new gun rules. From firearms owners who are slow to surrender now prohibited weapons and probably never will turn them in. Officials should have seen it coming. Quote, police are anticipating a number of people with banned firearms in their possession won't surrender them. A media named Stuff reported, Medium, at the end of May based on internal government documents. As of last week, around the 1st of July, only 700 weapons had been turned over. There are an estimated 1.5 million guns, with an unknown number subject to the new prohibition on semi-automatic firearms in the country overall. Traditionally relaxed in its approach to firearm regulations and enjoying a low crime rate, New Zealand has no firearms registration rule. That means authorities have no easy way of knowing what guns are in circulation or who owns them. You know, it used to be New Zealand, walk in, I'd like to buy that firearm, mate, and there you are, sir. Thank you so much. Cash is exchanged for firearm, and out the door you go. No registration, no registration rule in New Zealand until socialist government took over. These weapons are unlikely to be confiscated by police. They don't know of their existence, Philippa Jaspek of Gun Control New Zealand admitted. These will become black market weapons if their owners choose not to comply with the law and become criminals instead. You see, that's what a law-abiding gun owner is, who has obeyed the law his entire life, and then all of a sudden the government puts a restriction on you or passes a new law, regulation concerning firearms, and all of a sudden you are a criminal. And it's just pointed out by this group called Gun Control NZ. Listen to this quote. These will become black market weapons if their owners choose not to comply with the law and become criminals instead. I don't think so. I mean, do you, Chris?
Definitely not.
Black market implies that you're intending to get around the law and, you know, put a price on your firearms to get it into the hands of ne'er-do-well people.
Exactly, and sell it in the back alleys. And
yeah.
Yeah.
No. Definitely. I think these people that are hanging on to their firearms, recognizing that the government is coming after them, probably is hanging on to them for a very good reason.
That's right.
In America, we call that the Second Amendment. The right to people, right of people, citizens to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. So, Jaspek's organization, this chucklehead, advocates registering all guns in private hands, but that won't help with gathering guns already in the possession of owners appalled by the government's attacks on the rights of innocent people. Government attacks. It's worth noting that come in response to the crimes of one man who explicitly anticipated such a response. Listen to what this killer said. I chose firearms. The killer. These are the killer's words. For the effect it would have on social discourse. He wrote that in a document he released to explain his crimes. The gun owners of New Zealand are a beaten, miserable bunch of baby boomers who have long since given up the fight. When was the last time they won increased rights? Their loss was inevitable. I just accelerated things a bit. Interesting. Politicians fulfilled the murderers' predictions with panic-driven legislation. That gun owners would in large numbers defy restrictions should have been anticipated by anybody who knows the history of government attempts to disarm their subjects, or who just glanced across the Tasman Sea to Australia. In Australia, it is estimated that only about 20% of all banned self-loading rifles have been given up to the authorities, wrote Franz Cesar, professor of criminology at the University of Vienna. After Australia's 1996 compensated confiscation of firearms following a mass murder in Port Arthur, Tasmania, Cesar put the number of illegally retained arms in Australia at between 2 and 5 million. Now, he puts another term to it. Many members of the community still possess gray market firearms because they did not surrender these during the 96-97 gun buyback. The Australian Criminal Intelligence Commission conceded in a 2016 report, 20 years after the ban. The Australian Criminal Intelligence Commission continues to conservatively estimate that there are more than 260,000 firearms in the illicit firearms market. Okay. Should I continue?
I think your point's been well taken.
I mean, there's more to this, you know.
It's just more reason why we cannot have that happen here.
This is why we have to be vigilant. Vigilant. Did you hear the city council member the other day?
No, I missed it.
Oh, someone got shot in Baltimore. And this is just another reason why we have to end this gun... these gun crimes in Baltimore. We have to get these guns off the street. Well, you're a city councilman. What the hell are you doing about it?
Sitting there behind a desk.
Other than talking about it.
Exactly.
You know, and pointing fingers. Do something about the crime. Do something about the criminals. Enforce the laws that are already on the books.
Well, you've also got that incident down south with the person who, in their manifesto, as they went to go shoot up, I think, ICE agents, mentioned AOC and how that the transition camps were concentration camps. But, you know, he just got a gun and did all sorts of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, of course. Now, this is what Australian authorities say. Many members of the community, many members of the community, that would be law-abiding citizens, still possess gray market firearms because they did not surrender these during the 1996-97 gun buyback. Gray market, that's what it is. Just as Australian police named outlaw motorcycle gangs, Middle Eastern organized crime groups, and other groups engaged in trafficking illicit commodities such as drugs as beneficiaries of these prohibition-fueled black market in firearms, underground organizations are similarly poised to prosper in New Zealand. Gangs in the island nation announced very loudly after the new legislation was introduced that they wouldn't be surrendering their own weapons. Surprising, isn't it, that criminals, who illegally own firearms anyway, who probably got them through ill-gotten gains, are not giving their guns up to the government?
Well,
sounds like downtown, doesn't it?
I was going to say downtown Baltimore when they had the buyback program.
Yeah.
You know, what's happened now?
You got a bunch
homicides
of
homicides increased.
Yeah, you got a bunch of crap guns off the street that didn't shoot anyway.
Yeah.
And you know, the good ones are still working fine. Or you know, some elderly person has guns.
Mm-hmm.
And is turning in, you know, their Fox double or, you know, their you know, Python or something like that for $100 and they're being destroyed, you know,
mm-hmm.
not knowing what they have, which is sad. And we get calls here occasionally.
Yes.
You know, for people who want to sell firearms, want to know how to do that, want to know what they're worth. And I always say, let me come look at them, you know, and I'll give you an honest appraisal of what I think you've got. And some of them are mid low price firearms. Occasionally you'll see one that's semi worth something. But of course they've already had a friend come in and give them the blue book value on this on the firearm that's, you know, oh my gosh, this gun's worth $800. You know, the blue ink's gone, the stock's all chipped up. You know, there's a
they only see the high price.
There's a chunk out of the price, you know, out of the recoil pad, you know, and it's the front sight's missing. You know, well, my friend said, my uncle said, my cousin said it's worth $800. Might have been in the box. You know, right now it's worth $150, maybe. Oh, I can't believe that. Okay.
Go ahead. Try selling it.
Yeah, go ahead and sell it. Here's a couple sources for you. You know? Got an interesting article coming up in the quarterly next issue. Should you buy, sell, or pawn your firearm? You know, everything in firearms, in the firearms trade, is based on condition.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you're buying or selling a new firearm.
Exactly.
Okay. And if you go to a local shop and buy a firearm, one of our sponsors, for example, and you decide you're going to turn around and sell it the next day, you're not going to get anywhere near what you paid for it.
No, because it's like a car. The moment you take it off the lot, it decreases in value.
Exactly. Exactly. Now, if you have an antique firearm, if you have something from the Civil War era, World War One, World War Two, you know, that's in pristine condition, pre-1964 Winchester of some sort, you're going to get a higher price. Something collectible from, you know, us bunch of baby boomers, you know, who know the value of the firearms from their grandfathers or for the grandfather's era, you know, then you might have something there, okay? But I will tell you, if you have a auto-loading firearm that's functional and works well, you know, why not hang on to it? That's the ones they're coming after. Mm-hmm. And they're not just coming after the AR-15s. They're not just coming after the AK-47s. Legislation in these cases is written so broadly that they're coming after your 1100, your A5, your 1187, your Ruger Ranch rifle, 22 to, you know,
whatever they
500
can
doesn't really matter.
Yeah, whatever they can get their hands on.
It all has to do with the self-loading feature of that firearm. But is it any surprise that outlaw motorcycle gangs, Middle Eastern organized crime, and other organized crime, or even local gangs, you know, and they shall remain unnamed, but from, you know, foreign and domestic gangs with organization, is it surprise anybody that there's a free trade in firearms and the police seem powerless to stop it? The authorities seem powerless to stop it? Doesn't surprise me at all. Okay, enough said about that. Moving on. Captain Don sent me this article. Now, let's take a break, and then we'll do the next piece, okay? All right. Let's do the... Look, the red warning and yellow warnings are out there for striped bass fishing. I'm going to guess today, tomorrow, the warning is going to be red. If you're going to fish for striped bass, you need to fish early in the morning. Now, it was 85 this morning when I walked outside. Okay? That's way over the top. I've been in Arizona when it's been 85 at night and it's hot. It's 115 in the day and it's hot, but it's not as humid as it is here. And that just adds to the oppressive nature of the feeling of the day. But the water temperature is key. There's low dissolved oxygen. You're going to look for cooler, deeper water where there's some oxygen. shallower or shallow water, mm-hmm. where there's some stirring of the water table. You know, in the shallower water, the waves are coming in, the tides are coming in and out. That's a little more oxygenated than the mid level, so to speak. So, why am I going here? I'm talking about
the temperature of the water, as well as the air temperature and the stress that it causes on the fish.
Right, right. Well, what I'm getting at is that if you go to a local shop, like I'm going to tell you about right now, like Chesapeake Outdoors, they're going to be able to tell you. They're going to be able to tell you where you can go to fish today. If you want to go out there, and I hope you do, but if you do, be cautious. Okay? Be very cautious. So, Chesapeake Outdoors has everything you need for fishing. And if they have alternatives like perch, you know, to going out there, you know, beating your brains out for stripers. If you're going to go early, you know, go daylight to 9 o'clock. But where you go is Chesapeake Outdoors. You get your bait. You get your bucktails if you want to, you know, bucktail at the pilings or whatever you want to do. Or you can go crabbing. They've got everything you need for crabbing as well. Chesapeake Outdoors is a great place. You've been there, right?
Yeah, I stopped there
last
Thursday on the way to the Eastern Shore.
Oh, last Thursday?
Yeah, I was beating the rainstorm.
Yeah, literally.
As soon as I got to the other side of the bridge, the heavens opened up, and I was in Chesapeake Outdoors.
Oh, good, man. I'm glad to hear it. Nice store, isn't it?
It is.
First time there?
Yes.
Cool.
Wonderful.
Yep. Exit 39B, Dominion Road on Kent Island. If you're getting ready for bow season, it's the Matthews Vertix, or the Mission Sub-1XR crossbow, the Raven crossbows, the R26 and R29, and all the Hoyt bows are on absolute clearance sale, so make sure that you can visit their archery department. Talk to Pete while you're there. I already talked about the fishing tackle, live and frozen bait for fishing and crabbing, Yeti coolers, Costa sunglasses, Bubba Blade knives for fillet and release. First choice for Eastern Shore hunters and anglers, Chesapeake Outdoors, 410-604-2500. Alan Ellis here for Catonsville Linex and Bay Linex of Glen Burnie spray-on bedliners. Linex spray-on bedliners rated number one. Carry a nationwide lifetime warranty. Linex spray-on bedliner completely seals out water, meaning no rust in your bed. Your tools, your tackle, your crabbing and hunting gear can't hurt your truck bed. Choose the Linex premium bedliner or the Linex Extra. Both look great. And Catonsville Linex and Bay Linex now offer truck gear, the toughest accessories for your truck. Step bars, tonneau covers, floor liners, grill guards. You get it. Catonsville Linex and Bay Linex of Glen Burnie provide the best protection for your truck. Protect your investment, your pickup truck, like I did with a Linex spray-on bed liner, truck gear and accessories. Catonsville Linex, new location, 2076 Lord Baltimore Drive in Windsor Mill, just off Security Boulevard across from Coons Ford, 410-455-0800. That's 410-455-0800. Bay Linex of Glen Burnie, located at 201 Wholesome Way in Glen Burnie. Call 410-789-0199. That's 410-789-0199. Linex. Hey, just got a text or a message, whatever, something, you know, came across my phone from Camo Preacher. He's teaching Billy how to do Facebook Live fishing reports. You know, the fishing hotline's back up, which is nice. You can call, you know, at Clyde Sports Shop, you can call 410-247-FISH and get an updated fishing report. But I thought that was pretty cool that we're going to do live fishing reports from Mr. Bill. Pretty neat, pretty neat. And also Camo Preacher said we are streaming. Thank you very much for that. But Clyde's, you know, if you're going crabbing, man, you talk about a lot of stuff. They have got the Pasadena crab traps, the low profile crab traps, the topless crab traps. They've got the line, the tarred line to make your trot line if you want. They got trot lines rigged up to 1,000 feet, the weights, the snoods, the bait bags, the floats, baskets and lids, all the accessories, the measures, the tongs, the gloves, the crab mallets, crab bait like salted eel and chicken necks, aluminum steamers, and their own custom crab seasoning, all at Clyde Sports Shop. Of course, everything for fishing. Gunsmithing, licenses, rod and reel repair. All at Clyde Sports Shop. 2307 Hammonds Ferry Road in Lansdowne, just off Beltway exit number 9. Hunting season coming up. Don't forget about the fine Browning Firearms. Your full-line Browning dealer is Clyde Sports Shop. 410-242-6108, 242-6108. And don't forget that 24-hour fishing hotline, 247 fish. If you're a working man and your truck breaks down, you only need to know one repair shop, W&W Tire and Auto Service in Finksburg. They built your reputation on getting you in, fixed, and out the door quickly, efficiently, and at a very competitive price. Bridgestone and Firestone tires for pickups, SUVs, and commercial vehicles, large trucks, motorhomes, even diesel engines are no problem. W&W Tire and Auto Service on Route 140, 3233 Baltimore Boulevard in Finksburg. Just look for that big American flag. Call for an appointment, 410-833-8410, W&W Tire and Auto.
Talk Radio 680, WCPM.
This is for Sparky. Hope you're listening, babe.
You are my special angel, sent from up above. The Lord smiled down on me and said,
right. That is correct. All right. Saw the Vogues perform that song back in 1968. I was 14 years old.
Where?
Out of Pittsburgh. They were in Altoona, Pennsylvania. Okay. Local radio station brought them in. It was the Vogues, Spencer Davis, the Turtles.
Wow.
Were there. And it was kind of like they were on a rooftop at one of the local theaters or something. It was pretty cool. It was pretty cool.
I was going to say.
Yeah. And then the next night, and Sparky hates me for this, Sonny and Cher performed at the local roller skating rink.
Oh, cool.
It was cool. It was cool. It was really cool. So, yeah. All right. Oh, there's a message from somebody, Sparky. I guess she heard it. Yep. All right. Do we have anybody on the line there? Chris, you might want to grit that call.
Oh, okay. Now I see it. See, I got to turn the ringer down.
Oh, you got to turn the ringer down. Okay. Oh. I got it. All right. Well, look, we're busy here. Busy online, busy on the email, busy with messages. So hang on there. There is one thing before I get to Captain Dawn. Those of you listening who are members or officers of Chesapeake Forest Land, if you sent me email of the, one of the 250 clubs that, that are involved in the, leasing the Chesapeake Forest lands, there is a meeting coming up this coming week, the 25th. It's going to be at the Linkwood Volunteer Fire Department at 5:30. We're requesting two members of any of the clubs to show up at the fire department. And this is a kind of an organizational meeting. If you sent me email or one of your clubs sent me emails or you contacted me in some way, you should have gotten an email about that and about the context of the meeting. There is an agenda. There are people in charge that are concerned. It is kind of they're calling it the Chesapeake Forest Alliance. They've got a treasurer for, taking contributions. I'm sure they're going to be explaining the whole scenario to everybody there. I'm going to be at the meeting. So we're going to take the suggestion of Dan, who called in when we first started talking about that, and talk about obtaining the services of a lobbyist, which is going to be needed. So, it's not a secret. It's out there. If you go to the Maryland Hunting Coalition Facebook page, or Maryland Hunting Quarterly Facebook page. You'll see two contact numbers there for, hold on, let me see. I thought I printed this out, but I did not. Here it is. Yeah. Let's see if I can open this up. Ah! Okay. There are two, I'm not going to go on Facebook right now, but there are two numbers there. Phil Wells and John Long, who are going to be in charge of the meeting, so you can check that out on those Facebook pages. But yes, there is a meeting. And we intentionally, kind of limiting it to two members of each, club, or two officers preferably. It's going to lay out the whole plan if there is one. So there it is. Chesapeake Forest Land, Linkwood Fire Department, July 25th, 5:30. This is an organizational meeting. It is not a meeting put together by Department of Natural Resources or the Forestry Service or anybody else. So if you want more information, just send me an email, ellis@ellisoutdoors.com, and we'll be more than glad to forward that information to you. ellis@ellisoutdoors.com. Okay, talked about New Zealand. So, oh, they hung up. We didn't get to them soon enough. Call back, whoever it was. This is from On the Water. A website, Rhode Island DEM, Division of, I don't know what that is, DEM. Anyway, Massachusetts Department of the Environment or whatever, has posted an update on a citation made last September for men possessing 11 striped bass over the limit. A plea agreement, these are big fish, plea agreement was entered on July 11th with the owner of the vessel being fined $1,506.75. The estimated value of the fish, had they been sold, was around $2,000. In September 2018, an environmental police officer, an EPO from DEM's Division of Law Enforcement, boarded a vessel associated with repeated hunting and fishing violations during a routine patrol in Point Judith, Rhode Island. The front of the vessel appeared to be dipping low, as if there was considerable weight in the bow. In the original post, the vessel was reported as belonging to Michael A. Saviano of Warren, Rhode Island. The occupants of the vessel had stored their illegal catch in a hidden storage compartment in the bow. Once discovered, the EPO seized 13 striped bass, 11 over the daily limit allowed with two persons aboard a vessel. According to the RIDEM, Rhode Island Department of Environmental Matters or whatever, a common illegal practice is for Massachusetts commercial fishermen to fish the area around Block Island for striped bass under the guise that they're fishing recreationally and then transport them back to Massachusetts where they're sold. In an effort to curb this, a new regulation was adopted in 2015 that requires striped bass larger than 34 inches, the minimum commercial size, that are caught recreational to have their right pectoral fin removed immediately. It's then illegal to sell or purchase a striped bass with a cut pectoral fin in both Rhode Island and Massachusetts. In a press release after the incident was reported September 2018, Steve Medeiros, executive director of the Rhode Island Anglers Association, said, "It's a shame that few people are greedy and have no respect for our fisheries." And here is the line that got my attention. Welcome to Maryland. "We need stricter penalties along with judges who are willing to treat fisheries violations, and I will add wildlife violations, with the severity they deserve." Thank you, Captain Don, for that. Yeah, these are big rockfish, bigger than 34 inches. 13 of them aboard the boat, commercial value $2,000, fine for catching them illegally, $1,500. How about that? 410 WCBM 680, 410-922-6680 is my phone number here on the Outdoors and Radio Show. Chris Klaproth is our producer, and he will answer your telephonic message by saying, "Good morning, the Outdoors and Radio Show. This is Chris speaking. How may I assist you?" Or something like that, I'm sure. You know.
More like, "Thank you for calling WCBM. How can I help you?"
"Thank you for calling WCBM."
Yeah.
Oh, okay. You don't mention the Outdoors and Radio?
I could.
You don't?
And sometimes
You don't even say my name? How do the callers know who they're calling?
Because they're listening.
Good point. Just checking up on you, buddy.
I know.
You weren't here last week, remember?
I was, and I'm not going to be here next week either. But it's for a good cause. It's my field day.
Oh, it's field day.
Thursday night and Saturday morning.
Oh, cool. All right. Can't you do the show and then go?
No, because I would never make it. No, I can't. No. I would never make
you
it.
You wouldn't
fall
even
asleep.
Conscious.
That's right. I wouldn't.
Oh, man. All right. Let's talk about PETA. Here's an article from the Palm Beach Post. PETA pipes in. If you're killing iguanas, do it in the kindest manner possible. From the Palm Beach Post, July 12th, by somebody named Kimberly Miller. Florida Wildlife Commission wants people to humanely kill the invasive green iguanas in Maryland's snakeheads. Invasive green iguanas. But PETA says try to regulate them first and then kill. But do so to avoid prolonged suffering. Florida's taken heat from People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, PETA, for encouraging homeowners to kill iguanas on their properties whenever possible without instructions on how to do it humanely. So, Florida, you're bad. People can't figure out how to kill a lizard, a three-foot-long lizard on their property. Okay. In a letter Friday to the Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission, PETA asked the state to first take steps to more effectively regulate the possession of green iguanas and tell people how to dispatch them in the kindest manner possible, but continues to urge the use of lethal measures. Why don't we just adopt them? You know, then there'll be a report. 14 dead iguanas found in a room filled with iguana poop, and, you know, another 75 were confiscated living in squalid conditions from someone who tried to save them all. We'll get those reports, okay? Lizards are not healthy critters to have around. They're just not.
Especially iguanas.
Iguanas are nasty.
Yeah, they have no taste either.
They don't taste like chicken?
No, they actually, they're like soy. They only pick up the flavor that, you know, the sauce.
Oh, whatever the sauce.
Them.
Yeah, really?
Yeah, really.
Hey, you know, you and I talked about a movie the other day, Soylent Green. Maybe that could be a great source for protein or not. Anyway, green iguanas are an invasive species whose population has exploded following a mass die-off during the 2010 cold snap. But we're holding up Charlie here on line one. Good morning, Charlie. How are you?
All right. How you doing?
I'm good. What's up?
I bought a 22 bolt action with a clip years ago from an older woman.
Right.
Yeah, I think she'd be gone by now.
Sure.
How would I get that registered? Or would it be registered?
Why would you?
I mean, do I have to?
No.
Oh, okay.
No, just keep it in your possession and enjoy it. Pass it on to somebody in the next generation. Don't worry about it.
Oh, okay, because it has a clip. I guess it holds 10 shells.
But it's a bolt action.
Bolt action, yep.
Don't even think another thought about it. Just enjoy it.
Oh, okay.
All right?
Yeah, I heard you was 14 and 68.
Yeah, I was.
15.
You were what?
I said you were 14 years old and 68. I was 15.
Wow, cool.
We're about the same age.
Very close, very close. Yes, sir.
Yeah. But, yeah, I was just wondering, so I don't have to worry about it.
You don't have to worry about it. It's not a regulated firearm. You bought it on a private sale from an individual. God knows how old it is. Don't even worry about it.
Just 70s, I think.
Yeah, that's again. It's a 22 bolt action. Don't worry about it.
Oh, okay.
You're in good shape.
Yeah, I enjoy listening to your show. I listen to it every Saturday.
Well, thank you, Charlie. I appreciate
you guys
that.
Have a good program.
Oh,
I used to live up on Big Savage Mountain.
Oh, man, what a great place to live. What a view up there. Yeah, man.
I moved up there in 75. Right when you get off it used to be 48. Now it's 68.
Yeah.
Finzel?
Yeah, I know where Finzo is.
I live right there when you got off the exit.
And that's cool.
A few years later, if you went straight down a couple miles, you go into Pennsylvania.
That's right.
I lived in a little village called Pocahontas.
I know where Pocahontas is. I was from Somerset County.
Are you? Okay.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I know all about that area up there.
I lived right in Pocahontas.
Yep. I worked with a woman. My first job in the bank was in Myersdale.
You know what? I've been in Myersdale. Was that National Bank?
No, it was Gallatin National Bank.
Gallatin National. I know. That's who financed my house.
Gary Crane was my manager, and a woman by the name of Eileen lived in Pocahontas.
You know what? Were they in there in the 70s?
1972 is when I got my first job at the bank.
Yeah, well, that's when I moved up there in like 74, 75.
Yeah, you would have known him probably.
I do. I remember the name. And Sam, I think, was the president of the bank, an older man named Sam.
That was Sam Filson. That was the other bank. That was the other bank. That was the other bank in Myersdale. Yeah, Sam Filson. Sam Filson was the guy that created the mortgage for my first house that I built up there. And I was in my early 20s, 21, 22, so up in Berlin, Pennsylvania.
Berlin, I've been there. I used to go to that hardware store in Berlin. Then I went to Clappers in Myersdale.
Oh, yeah, Clappers in Myersdale. Krauss Hardware in Berlin. I graduated with Carol Krauss, who was the daughter of the owner. So,
okay. I knew all the issues.
Yeah, his name, I think, her dad's name was Blair, I think. Blair Krauss, yeah.
Yeah, I knew.
Yep.
I think that's something.
Yep.
All right, well, it's been nice talking to you.
Nice talking to you, Charlie. Maybe our paths have crossed in the past. You never know. Yeah, got it, buddy.
Yeah, I was a plaster. Yeah, I've been plaster all my life and a drywall finisher.
Right, right.
And I did a lot of work up in there through the years.
You didn't do the textured ceilings with the brush, did you?
Yes, I did.
You might have done my house in Berlin.
I did the circles around the lights.
Yeah, no, I didn't do that. We did the stipple finish with the brush.
Yeah, with the brush.
Yeah,
I might have.
You might have done our house, buddy. Who knows?
Right in Berlin, you said.
Well, it was just outside of Berlin, headed towards Somerset. Big long 1,100-foot driveway up the driveway. And was on a farm. It was 1 acre cut out of a big farm, and we built the house new in 75 or 76.
I was doing it up there then.
You may have been our drywall guy. Who knows?
And was I on the stilts?
Yeah, probably.
Probably, yeah. That's something.
That's wild, man.
Simon Swift was a contractor up there. At the time, I did his work too.
Yeah,
a lot of other ones.
Doesn't mean anything to me, Mr. Swift. Mm-hmm. So. All right, buddy. Well, thanks for the call. Stay in touch.
Yeah. Have a good day.
You got it. See ya. Mm-hmm. Bye bye. How about that, huh? Run into the guy in Dundalk that maybe drywalled my house back in the 70s.
As they say, it's a small world.
It is a small world, no question. So anyway, let's get back to the iguanas. So PETA says, regulate them first. Like regulating a snakehead, right?
Exactly.
Not going to happen. So the Florida Wildlife Commission, or whatever they call themselves, says the homeowners are encouraged to humanely kill green iguanas on their property whenever possible. They're not protected except by anti-cruelty laws, and no license is needed to kill them. Okay? If the commission insists on the slaughter of green iguanas. That's hard to
say
three times. Yeah,
fast.
Exactly. And pythons by largely inexperienced and untrained members of the public, it has an ethical duty to perform them of the unique physiology of the reptiles that requires immediate destruction of the brain in order to avoid prolonged survival and suffering, PETA says in its letter. So if some little old lady walks out there with a 9-iron and whacks one upside the head, she's perfectly legal to do that. And guess what? That's probably a pretty humane method.
That's right. One smack, that's it.
That's right. Oh, we'll talk more about this after the break, maybe.
Well, I want to get in there and take care of our advertisers, and that way we can get back to...
Yeah, we want to do that, of course. We do. But let's talk about Chesapeake Outdoors. I'll bet they have all types of lethal methods to take care of iguanas. I know they have plenty of stuff to catch snakeheads, our Maryland fish, invasive species here. There's an alternative for fishing for striped bass, snakeheads. Go on down there to Chesapeake Outdoors and make sure you check in and say, hey, who knows the most about snakeheads here? They'll all raise their hands, you know. Which they will, kind of. But they've got the bait. They've got the different lures and, the, you know, some of the modified bass fishing stuff. They got this real cool rattling float that people use for snakeheads, and it tends to attract them to your bait. So, you know, why not go snakehead fishing this weekend and stop by Chesapeake Outdoors? Now, if you're going crabbing, they have everything there, too, crab pots and traps and nets and ready-to-go trot lines and trot line components and all the bait and crab seasonings and steamers. They have the stainless steel steamers at Chesapeake Outdoors. You know, we used to promote them through another dealer here, and many people here went there and got them. Well, if you're looking for one of those stainless steel steamers made right here in Maryland, by Hartford Metals, they got them right there at Chesapeake Outdoors. Licenses, ramp permits, and everything else. So, Chesapeake Outdoors. Fishing, hunting, crabbing. You've been there. You've seen it, Chris. And they're located Route 50 East, exit 39B, Dominion Road exit, Kent Island. 410-604-2500, right off Route 50. 410-604-2500. Chesapeake Outdoors. Go get them.
Busting records here across the area for the weekend. Heat alerts up and down the 95 corridor. We're in the heart of it here in Baltimore today. 100 this afternoon and close to daily records. 80 are low tonight. Heat indices today at or above 110. That is dangerous heat for any age group. Take it easy. Take breaks in the AC. Keep the water coming. Check that back seat twice before walking away from your vehicle. Low 100s again tomorrow. I'm meteorologist Scott Laurie. More from the Weather Channel for Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
This is Alan Ellis for Bay Linex of Glen Burnie and Catonsville Linex spray-on bedliners. Linex spray-on bedliners are rated number one and carry a nationwide lifetime warranty. A Linex spray-on bedliner completely seals out water, meaning no rust in your bed. Your tools, your tackle, crabbing, and hunting gear can't hurt it. Choose the Linex Premium or the Linex Extra. Both look great. Bay Linex and Catonsville Linex now offer truck gear, the toughest accessories for your truck. Step bars, tonneau covers, floor liners, grill guards, you get it. Bay Linex of Glen Burnie and Catonsville Linex provide the best protection for your truck. Protect your investment, your pickup truck, like I did with a Linex bed liner and truck gear accessories. Bay Linex of Glen Burnie, located at 201 Wholesome Way in Glen Burnie. 410-789-0199. 410-789-0199. Catonsville Linex. New location, 2076 Lord Baltimore Drive in Windsor Mill. Just off Security Boulevard across from Coons Ford. 410-455-0800. 410-455-0800. Linex. Nothing is more frustrating than a dead battery. When your truck won't start or your boat or ATV leaves you stranded far from home, that's not good. The solution is Battery Warehouse. Not only does Battery Warehouse provide batteries for your car or truck, you can find marine batteries for cranking or trolling, ATV batteries, tractor batteries, motorcycle batteries, and batteries for all outdoors equipment. Did you know Battery Warehouse has batteries for wild game feeders, dog collars, cell phones, predator calls, and trail cameras? How about your video camera? Or if you tow your boat or trailer, your trailer brake control battery? Any battery you need. With 10 locations in Central Maryland, there's a Battery Warehouse convenient to you. Bel Air, Frederick, Cockeysville, Glen Burnie, Dundalk, Hagerstown, Westminster, Eldersburg, Parkville, and Woodlawn. Visit BatteryWarehouseMaryland.com online for the phone numbers and more information. When you need a hot flash, get to the Battery Warehouse near you. W&W Tire and Auto Service in Finksburg is taking care of my trucks for over 25 years. Anything from a simple oil change to extensive engine work, brakes, tune-ups, everything, their motto is, we do it. Bridgestone and Firestone tires for pickups, SUVs, and commercial vehicles. Large trucks, motorhomes, even diesel engines are no problem. W&W Tire and Auto Service on Route 140, 3233 Baltimore Boulevard in Finksburg. Look for the big American flag. Call for an appointment, 410-833-8410. W&W Tire and Auto.
Put another log on the fire. Cook me up some bacon and some beans. And go out to the car and change the tire. Wash my socks and sew my old blue jeans. Come on, baby, you can fill my pipe. And then go fetch my slippers. And boil me up another pot of tea.
I think you just blew it, Chris.
No.
No?
No, I did it intentionally.
Did you really? You're going to get a text. 410-WCBM 680, 410-922-6680 is our phone number. So, iguanas. I know, we don't have them here in Maryland, but this is just a fun article, right? Right, Chris? Just fun. PETA doesn't want you. Remember, PETA put up the, you know, each crab is an individual. Treat them with respect here in Maryland. You remember that?
That's right.
They're the ones that wanted Maine to build a monument to lobsters killed in a truck crash.
Yep, and how a particular spice company had their own little rebuttal, which was hysterical.
Yes, indeed. Anyway, spokesman for FWC said earlier this month that people can't violate anti-cruelty laws when killing iguanas. But since there aren't any additional regulations related to iguana removal, there really isn't anything else for us to comment on further. In other words, they're out there. We hate them. You hate them. Go kill them. Because all it's going to do, the problem's going to do is get worse. Not enough cold weather to kill them, okay? We suggest people wanting to remove iguanas seek guidance from legal resources and other scientific and or scientific literature, she said. Typical bureaucratic response. Not that we've ever seen that in Maryland at all, but William Kern, he's an associate professor in the entomology and nematology department at UF's Fort Lauderdale, University of Florida, Fort Lauderdale Research and Education Center. Sounds very important, doesn't it? Yes. Recommends homeowners hire a professional licensed trapper because humanely killing an iguana, well, that can be, shall we say, tricky. UF study last year for FWC tested different live traps for iguanas, whether trapping was more effective than catching by hand using a lasso or other manual device. In 3 months, just 38 iguanas were caught using traps, while more than 800 were caught by hand. What's that tell you about this study by UF and the professor? Well, the methods used to kill them complied with American Veterinary Medical Association guidelines for the euthanasia of animals. Glad to hear that. Those include gunshot, captive bolt pistol, cerebral electrocution, and blunt force trauma. So I guess the lady with the 9-iron would be perfectly justified and comply with all the American Veterinary Medical Association guidelines. We'll be back after the next hour. I want to talk about bears and other stuff. I'm Alan Ellis. This is the Outdoors and Radio Show. See you next hour.